Last year, the National Institutes of Health spent $31 billion on drug research. The drug companies themselves spent $39 billion. More and more drug companies are sponsoring their own studies, studies eventually published in reputable medical journals. The Washington Post's Peter Wariski, who wrote about pharma-funded research, says that at best, it increases the potential for bias and at worst, can lead to outright deception. Take the case of the diabetes drug Avandia, manufactured by GlaxoSmithKline. In 2006, the New England Journal of Medicine published a study funded by GlaxoSmithKline that reviewed the drug favorably. But, as Wariski notes, the drug company knew better.
They had seen some of the studies internally that showed potential heart problems for people, and they hired some prominent academics, and they found that Avandia was, lo and behold, very effective and caused no more heart problems than some of the leading competitors. It turns out that was wrong. There were reasons for why the study didn't get to the truth, really, and that's why I decided to pick up the Avandia story.
GlaxoSmithKline engaged friendly scientists to design an experiment to underplay the cardiac side effects?
The sort of the magic of all this stuff is what you test. If you give people the drug who have relatively strong hearts compared to the people who probably will be taking the drug, elderly diabetic people, you're going to not see the sign of heart attacks as much. And that's what happened here. One of the things that happened here is that the signal, as they call it, was hidden. And then in 2006, after a doctor at the Cleveland Clinic put all the data he could find out there on the internet, it showed that there was this heart attack signal, the sales started to tank. Finally, in 2010, the FDA put big restrictions on it, and it was essentially banned in Europe. It's gone away for the most part.
You came to discover in reporting this piece that there were a whole mess of fairly significant conflicts of interest by not just the sponsors of the study, GlaxoSmithKline, but the authors. Can you list some of those conflicts for me?
There were 11 authors, I think, of this article that we're talking about. Four of them were employees, and the others all had taken money from Glaxo for one reason or another. Either they were consultants or speakers or conducted research for them in the past.
You took pains in your piece to point out that just because research is funded by the industry, it doesn't mean that it is necessarily fudged or manipulated or wrong.
Some of the most fervent critics of these studies will say the big problem is that they do a heck of a lot of really good research and they do some terrible things. It's impossible to tell the difference. So the upshot of this was actually another study published in the New England Journal of Medicine, which showed that doctors who, you know, rely on the New England Journal of Medicine for the latest in research are much less likely to prescribe a drug that they read about in an industry-funded trial. So it holds back all of medicine.
Why isn't the government underwriting all these studies?
The government funding has steadily gone up. It's just that the pharmaceutical industry funding has gone up much, much faster. So you end up, if you're a professor somewhere and you want to do research, there's only one game in town. You have to go to the pharmaceutical companies. A lot of them will say, look, I do an honest job, but there are all kinds of issues that come up when you're trying to design a trial, like what are you going to measure? Who's going to be included in the trial? Even if you're the savviest cardiologist, there are going to be aspects of the trial that the industry wants to see that you might not even be aware that's what they're doing.
Now, it's one thing for a pharma company to accentuate the positive, but your piece shows that they actively suppressed the negative. When medical journals continue to publish drug company-sponsored studies, aren't they becoming accessories to a kind of scientific fraud?
Well, the journals themselves have gotten together and said, look, if you're going to have a company funding the trial, we want to know what was their role in the study? Who did the statistics? Who did the data collection? They're also requiring full disclosure of the academic authors. What are your financial connections to the company? At the same time, there's been a sort of separate move that forces all clinical trials to be registered. What was happening in the past was that companies would do trials, and if the result was unflattering about their product, they wouldn't tell anybody. So they can no longer do that. The big gap, and this is sort of where all the mistrust lies, is that for the most part, the journals don't see all of the data in a trial. But there's kind of a move afoot in Europe to force companies to put all of the data about all of the trials that they have conducted on any drug that is on the market and put that up on the web. That means if they come out with a press release saying this drug is great or this drug is safe, somebody, if they really, really want to, they could go through and do their own statistics on the data.
These studies funded by pharma underpin the entire reprints business. The New England Journal of Medicine and others make money by selling reprint rights to pharma companies, and no pharma company reprints a study that makes its drug look bad. Are you confident that the New England Journal of Medicine was merely snookered here by a wily pharma apparatus?
I think that the editor of the New England Journal of Medicine, he's genuinely concerned about these issues. He knows that patients' lives are at stake, but there is a potential conflict of interest for any journal because you're right, there's a lot of money to be made on reprint.
You know, we've done these stories quite often over the years, and sometimes I feel as if I'm staring in the face of evil. In the case of Avandia, people died. What does GlaxoSmithKline have to say about that?
In essence, they say we did our best. I have sometimes wondered the same thing. I go back and forth on this. There is genuine enthusiasm on these teams that are developing new drugs. It's not just for Avandia. I talked to these other guys, and I went through and I said, you know, none of the evidence that you presented was very convincing, actually, in retrospect, given everything that we know. How could you have made all these mistakes? And this was a guy who didn't work for one of the drug companies. He's a doctor at a prominent hospital. And he said, you know, at the end of the day, we were just really excited about the drug. We wanted it to work. And you blind yourself to some of the danger signals.
Peter, many thanks.
Thank you very much.
Peter Wariski is a writer for The Washington Post.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.